Hey friends, this episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at indeed.com/creative. Hey friends, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host and the author of a bunch of books. I won't name them all, but the new one is called The Motivation Code, which is available now wherever books are sold. One of the things that we struggle with as creative pros is we never seem to be able to leave our work behind. That's especially true right now, right? When many of us are working out of our homes, you know, there's no separation between work and home. And we always sort of said that before, you know, I kind of take my work home with me, but now your work is in your home all the time. You're five steps away from your laptop at any given point in time, depending on how big your house is, right? But just saying, you're pretty close to your laptop at all times. You have your phone with you. It is really difficult to find, to strike some sort of rhythm when it comes to home life, personal life, work life, your physical life, when it comes to taking care of yourself, making sure that you are aligning your activities every day around a set of values that really matter to you. It's really difficult to do these things when everything feels like one giant soup of activity. There's no clean delineation between work and home, personal life, and public life. On today's show, we have someone who's going to help us sort through all of these things. Her name is Megan Hyatt Miller. She is the co-author, along with her father, Michael Hyatt, of the new book, When at Work, Succeed at Life, Five Principles to Free Yourself from the Cult of Overwork. And she's going to help us figure out how to strike that rhythm effectively. And we're going to talk to Megan in just a minute. Before we do, I want to remind you, this episode is brought to you by Indeed. So if, let's say you run a business, or if you are someone who's responsible for creating value in the world and you're trying to compete in the marketplace, you know that the key to success is finding an edge and leveraging it. Well, if you're hiring, that edge is Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. You post, you screen, and you interview, all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster, and only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications. And you can schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and super easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match giving you quality candidates whose resume on Indeed fits your job description immediately, and Indeed Skills Tests that on average reduces hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skills tests, or you can add your own, then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. So get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your post at indeed.com/creative. Again, get a $75 credit at indeed.com/creative. Indeed.com/creative. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. We thank Indeed for sponsoring this episode of the Axon Creative Podcast. Well, I'm excited to welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast today, Megan Hyatt Miller. Megan is the CEO of Michael Hyatt & Company. She's also the co-author of the new book, When at Work, Succeed at Life, Five Principles to Free Yourself from the Cult of Overwork. It is a cult. I'm glad somebody finally called that out. It is a cult, the cult of overwork. Megan, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Hey, Todd. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
And I loved this book. It's no secret. I mean, I was willing to write an endorsement for this book, which I usually don't do a lot of. I try, you know, but I loved this book. And I'm certain that COVID probably hit in the middle of writing this book. I'm curious to hear how the tendency to overwork has changed at all from your perspective due to our present circumstances.
Well, I think COVID has had probably 2 effects on work, among many, you know, but related to overwork. One is we're kind of trapped at home, unable to get away from our work, right? So there's this constant pressure to be always on. So many people are working remotely for the first time. And in doing that, what they find is the boundaries between work and the rest of their life are really squishy, you know? And it can be so easy to find yourself drifting into overwork where that just becomes the norm and the habit and even the expectation inside your organization or with your clients. And it can be really detrimental. I think the other thing is that we've all been faced with the challenge of having that blurry line between work and home, where for many of us, our kids are home or our partner's home. And that can make it really challenging too, either because we're having to work at odd times to work around, you know, the kids that are home, or because we feel the need to escape that. So we work more. That's one of the reasons that sometimes overwork is prevalent, is because working can be easier and at times more rewarding than what's going on at home, which is harder to measure. And so I think those things have really exacerbated this kind of cult of overwork. And it creates so much tension for us that we feel, because we have all these personal demands that are just in our face 24/7.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, in the past you would say something like, or one would say, you know, answering 5 emails right now feels a lot more productive than trying to come up with an idea for the next project we're working on. But now, like you just said, answering 5 emails feels a lot more productive than going and having a difficult conversation with my child, you know, and it's funny because now that work and home has been blurred, work is always an option, and it kind of always was with our phones and all of that, but it's not in the same way. Like, we can justify it now in a way we couldn't before.
Well, we also don't have the environmental cues that tell us that we're not at work anymore. Mm. You know, we don't have the drive home. We don't have, you know, that last meeting of the day where we walk out and we grab our stuff and, you know, head out, and we don't have the transition, that decompression time between work and home, which can be really difficult too. So I think all of this contributes to we're not even necessarily aware sometimes that we're overworking. And that's one of the things that we've really seen in the research for this book, When at Work and Succeed at Life, is that people are often not aware how much they're either actively working or monitoring their work.
Hmm. So we're doomed. That's what you're saying.
Thankfully, we're not doomed, but are doomed if we kind of are sleepwalking through our life, which is the case for many of us, until we, you know, we kind of have some moment that shakes us out of that a little bit.
Great. All right. So there's several concepts in this book that I want to try to dive into. Early in the book, you talk about a couple of things that I've never really heard put into language like this before, but sometimes I believe that simply having language for things sometimes helps us deal with them in new ways. And you talk about the hustle fallacy and the ambition break. Could you share what each of those are and how we fall into those mindsets?
Yeah. So, you know, in our culture, we're really presented with these binary options. We can either win at work or succeed at life. And our premise in the book is actually, your professional life and your personal life are complementary to one another. And when you attend to both, when you win at work and succeed at life, that's the best of all possible outcomes. But what we're presented with culturally is either the hustle fallacy that says, you know what, whatever I have to do to succeed, I'm going to just go all in. I'm going to absolutely play full out at work. And, you know, that's probably going to be temporary. I've got this big project, or I'm working on this big deal, or my boss asked me to do this, or I'm launching this new thing. And so probably just, you know, for the next month or the next 6 months, I'm going to really have to work a lot. And that'll be worth it, because the payoff's going to be amazing, you know. Yeah. And we hear this where people are bragging all the time about how much they're hustling, you know, how little sleep they got. That becomes kind of the new bragging rights, how much they were able to get done. And so that's one option. What we don't hear, though, very often, although we hear this kind of in the news from time to time, and people like Elon Musk, where the people that are subscribing to the hustle fallacy, they lose their families often, they lose their health, they lose their impact in the world outside of their professional life. They spiritually feel kind of bankrupt. You know, there are these compromises that they make by telling themselves it's going to be temporary and they just have to hustle for a while. And what happens is that temporary becomes the new permanent, and the consequences are huge. And sometimes we can't get back from those. You know, there's a level of regret that comes on the other side of that, that for us just feels untenable, you know, and like a terrible choice. So then the converse of that would be the ambition break. And the ambition break is where you say, oh yeah, I don't want that. That's terrible. You know, I don't want to sacrifice my marriage or my relationship with my kids or my impact in the world outside of my professional life. You know, I don't want to do that. So I guess what I'm going to have to do is just kind of, you know, pull back on my ambition. I'm going to have to not pursue things quite so aggressively, because I know what that's going to cost me and I don't like that. So these are your binary choices, the hustle fallacy and the ambition break. And we say, no, that feels like an impossible choice between those things. We don't like it. There's got to be a third way. And the third way is what we call the double win, which is winning at work and succeeding at life.
Which sounds like a wonderful ambition. And I think to some people might sound a bit like a pipe dream to think that you can do that. Especially in, as you mentioned, in this world that we, you know, we live in this world where hustle is celebrated, it's almost fetishized and sort of, it is a cult. Like you said, the cult of overwork, you know, oh, I'm hustling, I'm grinding, I'm, you know, working until midnight. Oh, I'm working until 3 a.m. Oh, you worked till 3 a.m. I stayed up all night, you know?
Yeah. Right.
There's this kind of thing. And to your point, we don't count the cost of that. We don't understand that actually, not only is that affecting the other parts of our life, but it's affecting our work. Like we will Absolutely. Do subpar work if we just work 24/7 nonstop.
Well, you know what's interesting, Todd, is that the research says, and this is in a Stanford University study, that every hour you work over 50 basically counts for nothing. Hmm. So in productivity research, there is just no evidence to suggest that overworking is actually productive. There's a law of diminishing return that is in play when you're looking at somebody working 60, 70 plus hours a week. You think that you're getting something out of that, but you're actually not. You're actually getting less than the person working a reasonable number of hours. And that's just because as humans, we have finite limitations. We have to sleep. You know, you are not the exception. You are not the one person who can sleep 4 hours a night and be fine without consequences. In fact, what we know is that if you're sleeping, you know, like 6 hours a night or less, you're basically the same as someone who's legally intoxicated. Mm-hmm. And what that means, to your point, is that has a profound impact on our performance as individuals, but also ultimately in the performance of our businesses and our teams. You know, we may get short-term gains from this hustle fallacy. You know, you may be able to eke out a little more in the very short term, but if you're interested in long-term accelerated performance, the best way to accomplish that is to win at work and succeed at life, because the rest of your life will ultimately complement your professional ambitions.
All right, well, let's talk about how to do that, because this book isn't just high-level theory. You offer some very practical and research-based tips for doing this. There are five principles. I'm going to do an overview of each of them because and we won't be able to get into too many details. This is why people need to read the book. But the first one is you need to define your double win. How do we begin to do that?
Yeah, so this is really, it's not a complicated thing, but it's something that most of us have not thought about for a while. It's really about identifying what your non-negotiables are in your life in three areas. The first one is self-care. Okay, so this is one that oftentimes goes by the wayside when we're in that hustle mode. We don't think a lot about it, but what do you need? If you thought about yourself more like a professional athlete than just a professional, what would you need to perform at your best? Things like sleep, nutrition, movement, those are critically important for you. What are you not going to compromise on? You know, for me, what that looks like is I sleep 8 hours a night. I go to bed at 9. I get up at 5 every day. It means that I'm planning my meals throughout the day, not because I'm on some super rigid diet, but because I want to make sure I have a plan. Like today I came in, I got to have a plan for lunch between interviews that I'm doing, otherwise my blood sugar and energy by 2 o'clock is going to be non-existent. But sure. So many of us just, you know, there was a time when I would have gone and grabbed a Coke and a Snickers bar and that would have been lunch if I was lucky. Right. And you know, I'm making sure that I'm exercising every day. You know, I lifted weights at home this morning before I got on here with you, Todd. So that's, for me, that's what self-care looks like. You have to answer that question for yourself. Everybody's different, but self-care is number one. The second thing is, what are your relational priorities? What are non-negotiable for you that you are going to schedule in before you schedule anything else? You know, for me, that looks like every Tuesday, my husband Joel and I go on a date night. We have 5 kids. We got to get a break from the kids. We got to prioritize each other. You know, that's critically important. The other thing we do is family dinner. You know, it's not always fancy, but we sit down at the table and we talk about our day with the kids and we just connect. And that's, as they get older, especially my kids are 20 to 2. That's really important for us. And then we're people of faith, so we go to church on Sunday, you know, or virtually for a lot of the last year. Right. But for us, those are our relational priorities. And then professional results. So, you know, what I think is important to make sure we talk about here is I am not advocating some kind of pie in the sky, you know, warm and fuzzy self-care thing that doesn't really tie back to your professional results. Because, you know, for every person that's listening, I want you to get the best professional results of your life. And I think that this double win model is the way to do it. Mm. But what that means is getting very clear on the results you're producing and then focusing your time, energy, and attention on the things that move the needle and letting the rest go, you know, because so often we spend our time not on the high leverage activities, which means we work more, which means our results aren't where they need to be. So that's kind of how we think about defining the double win for yourself. Is you've got to have self-care, you've got to have relational priorities in check, and you've got to have your professional results clearly in mind so that you can win at work and succeed at life.
You know, I think so much of the methodology that you teach at Michael Hyatt and Company, there's no magic in the system per se. Nope. It's just awareness. It's simply, yeah, you know, defining what a win looks like in this area, defining, yep, what a win looks like at work, what a win looks like at home, what a win looks like relationally, you know, yep, these kinds
of
things.
Being intentional.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we drift and months pass and we don't even realize how much of our life we've spent it without any kind of purpose or direction or meaning, mm-hmm, sometimes.
I think that's really true. And especially having just gone through this pandemic, you know, I have so much empathy for everybody right now, because I think we've gone through a really traumatic season. Yes. We're just from a kind of evolutionary biology perspective or neurobiology perspective, we are wired to think about survival first. Mm-hmm. And we have been in a season where our brains are thinking about survival. Many of these things have gone by the wayside as we've tried to keep our businesses going and pivot and do all the things that were necessary, especially, you know, and a lot of your audience are creatives. And, you know, that's been challenging for people in this season. So I would just encourage you, if you feel like, gosh, I'm way off track, it's totally okay. There's never a wrong time to get back on track or to come back to being intentional. And there's a lot of room for self-compassion around why you might be out of balance in these areas. It's totally normal, totally understandable, and it's not forever. It can be changed.
Absolutely. All right. So the second principle relates to actually one of my favorite quotes. Orson Welles once said, "The absence of limitations is the enemy of art." And
yeah,
I've always loved that quote. And your second principle is constrain your workday. Could you talk about the importance, yes, of limitations and constraints?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I mean, Parkinson's law tells us that work expands to the time allowed. And Hyatt's corollary says that work contracts, easy for me to say, to the time permitted. So what that basically means is if you give yourself a 12-hour workday, you'll always find 12 hours of things to fill it up, right? Yeah. Conversely, what we have done, actually, this became an experiment in the midst of COVID for us. We moved to a 6-hour workday. We have been big proponents of a 40-hour week and, you know, hard edges on a 9-to-5 day and all that for a long time. But what we found with our team, people were emotionally exhausted. I mean, the stress of the pandemic, the kids home, the toddlers crawling on people in meetings, you know, Zoom fatigue, all the things were real. And we said, like, we need to shorten this day. But the question for us was, can we shorten our work day without compromising our results? And so without changing anybody's salary, without changing our financial goals for the year, we said, okay, let's try it. And what we found is that those constraints, those hard edges on the day, a 9-to-3 work day, actually drove innovation. Because now all of a sudden you have to think about everything differently. And this is kind of what that Parkinson's law and Hyatt's corollary idea mean. When you put the edges on something, all of a sudden you start asking different questions. You start seeing different solutions and you have different kinds of innovations. And what happened for us is we started focusing even more on the most high leverage things. We were not able to continue doing in 30 hours a week a bunch of the stuff that we were doing in 40, and we weren't just magically going to fit 40 into 30. We had to really refocus on the most important things. And where we ended up for the year is we exceeded our profit goal by 50% in a pandemic year, working 25% less than we had before. So that's the power of constraints and putting those edges on. And if you're the leader in your organization, you know, maybe you're a solopreneur, maybe you have a small team, or maybe you're leading a team, you have to model this because your people will never do what you don't do. So if you're working, you know, 7 to 6 or 7 to 7, they're not going to work 9 to 5 or 9 to 3. You know, you've got to model what you want in terms of those constraints.
Yeah. Well, and that actually plays into the third principle, which is that it's important to schedule what matters. And I think a lot of people argue, well, I've got my task list. Why do I need to schedule things? If I have a list of things that I know I need to do, why is it important that we schedule what matters?
Well, because, I mean, as my dad says, what gets scheduled gets done, you know, and if we don't schedule first our most important priorities, and this is true at work and it's true at home, you know, if we don't schedule the high leverage activities that work on that project that you know is laying the groundwork for the future of your business, for that date night with your spouse, with that trip with one of your kids, you know, whatever, exercise, if you don't schedule those things, all the urgent things, things that are often urgent to other people and may be important to other people, but maybe less than urgent and important to you, will start to crowd out the space for the things that are truly important and sometimes urgent, you know? So you've probably seen that great video of Stephen Covey doing this years ago. It's like a terribly grainy video, probably from like the early 80s, where it's called the Big Rock Demonstration. Yes. And he puts those big rocks in a cylinder, and then smaller rocks, and then some smaller rocks and sand. And what you see is the big rocks always fit if you put them in first. However, if you put all the little stuff in, if you start with the sand and then you put the pebbles and then you put the small rocks, and then at the end you try to get the big rocks in there, there's no room. And that's exactly like our lives. We've got to schedule the most important things first.
Which sometimes is obvious, right? Sometimes those important things are obvious. Sometimes they're maybe a little less obvious.
Right.
And one of the principles you talk about is the importance of maintaining a hobby that delights you, or having something in your life you're doing that is not work related. I always call this, when I speak to groups, I call it back burner creating or unnecessary creating. I used to call it unnecessary creating, and I thought maybe that's that was what it was in the Accidental Creative. And I thought maybe that's not the right term, because it actually is very necessary. So I started calling it back burner creating. Could you talk about the importance of this practice?
Yeah, I love this so much. And I'm going to tell you what, if you're an achiever and you're listening, you're probably like, yeah, right. I don't have time for hobbies. I don't have any hobbies. You know, my hobby is maybe getting enough sleep sometimes or whatever. I totally get that. It doesn't come naturally to me either. But I will tell you what, that I know from my own experience, and the research absolutely backs this up. The best ideas that you're ever going to have for your business, the most creative, the most kind of in flow that you're ever going to be, is usually when you're doing something other than work. You know, so for me, one of my hobbies is running. I love running. I love getting outside. I hate a treadmill. Oh my gosh, if I ever buy one, so that's like a red flag. Someone should pull me over. But you know, when I get out on my path where I run, I have great ideas. I mean, I don't get 10, 15 minutes into that where I don't have some kind of brainstorm. Hmm. Same is true. Our family has a lake house. I love to fish. I mean, I'm not like a great fisherman. I've been fishing all my life with my dad and my granddad. I fly fish a little bit. That's fun. But on the weekends, you know, I'm not going out fly fishing. I'm mostly just fishing off the dock or off the boat or something. And there's just something about that for me that it rejuvenates and re-engages my brain. And I'll often have ideas. And so if you care about your creativity, if you care about constantly having the ability to access innovative thinking in your business, then you've got to have a hobby. You know, same thing for me with baking and cooking, something about that tactile thing. It's like I can't obsess about problems because I'm consumed in the hobby, and that's just the best thing possible for my brain.
Yeah. I love that principle. And, you know, often what we don't realize is our best ideas are going to come from those types of activities. It's doing things that are that have nothing to do with our current job or our current project or whatever, but the best ideas don't come from staring harder at the problem. They come from out there somewhere.
Right. You know, it's kind of like when your brain gets into that lockdown of got to figure this out mode, it's exactly opposite of what's going to happen. I mean, there's a reason your best ideas usually come in the shower. There's good research on that. Mm. And it's the same thing with hobbies. I'm just getting ready to start right now. One of my annual goals is to learn to play the piano this year. And I haven't done that since I was about 12 years old, but I have my plan. I've got to order my keyboard, you know, but I'm just getting ready to do that. And the other thing that it does for us, it gives us the opportunity to be beginners again, which is something for a lot of us, you know, we haven't done that in a while. And that is incredible for our creativity.
Right. All right. So the final principle, the fifth principle, is to start the day with a good night's sleep. And, you know, I've been reading a lot of research about how people have been struggling with sleep during the pandemic. And it's weird. And you wouldn't think that because, you know, for many of us, we don't have a commute right now. So you would think we're getting a little more time to sleep if we wanted. We don't have to be up quite as early or you know, we're not rushing home from work, so maybe our sleep schedule can be varied. You know, we can go to bed earlier, but people are struggling with sleep right now. Why do you think that is, and what can we do to better prepare ourselves through sleep?
Well, I mean, I think for one thing, we're in front of our screens. We know that blue light is detrimental to our circadian rhythm, so I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. Just our general anxiety the last year, for so many reasons, has been incredibly stressful and kicked our anxiety into overdrive. We're probably outside less, so we're getting, you know, less sunlight. All those kind of things are in play. But sleep is critical. And sometimes what we think falsely is that sleep is a reward, instead of sleep is the thing that actually sets us up to do our best work, you know? And I would say, if you're thinking, man, my self-care is like all over the map, it's just, it's not happening right now, or it used to be good, it's not good right now, and you're wondering where to start, and you're thinking, I got to start running tomorrow, I would say the best thing you can do for your self-care, if you care about your performance professionally, is to sleep. You know, exercise, nutrition, hugely important. But if you're not sleeping, it doesn't really matter what you're going to do in those other areas, because your body is always going to be breaking down. The amazing thing about sleep is that it really solidifies learning. It enables better decision making, and it builds our emotional reserves. And I don't know about you, but when I think back to the last year, the ability to learn in real time, to pivot, the ability to make high stakes decisions, you know, with you know, not a lot of time and not a lot of ability to do research, the ability to emotionally respond to the challenges that are coming to me, the opportunities. I mean, that's what I need those things, right? Yeah. That's mission critical for me as a leader and a professional. And so to me, sleep is the secret weapon to performance. If you really want to see your performance go up, get 7 to 8 hours a night, night after night after night. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, when we started talking, Todd, if you're sleeping 6 hours a night or less, it's like being legally intoxicated. I mean, that's sobering, right? It's just, wow.
It is. So one final question for you. I know we're hearing all this and we're applying it to ourselves, but I know there are a lot of leaders listening right now who also might be thinking, okay, how can I maybe facilitate this within the organization that I lead? Mm-hmm. What are some ways that leaders can apply these principles?
Yeah, well, I mean, like everything, the first most important thing is to do the work yourself, right? So you've got to really determine that this is something to double win, winning at work and succeeding a life that you want. And then you've got to develop a vision for what that looks like in your own life around these non-negotiables: self-care, relational priorities, professional results. So lead by example is the first thing. I think the next thing is to really identify what those hard edges are. You know, we've got to be able to put the constraints on the work day and the work week, so our team knows they don't have to be on monitoring email or Slack at night or on the weekends. You know, we have a policy internally: if we need you, we'll text you if it's outside of hours. You know, and it is rare that happens. And believe it or not, there's not a lot of emergencies. Like it's just okay. But, you know, to explicitly say, here are the edges. I think also to give people autonomy so that you're holding them accountable for results, not how they get their work done or, you know, working a certain number of hours, except, you know, if it gets out of control on the too much side. So we want to hold people accountable for results and give them a lot of autonomy for how they get to that outcome, because that's one of the ways that they can have innovation and really help us get efficiency. We also want to connect the dots for people around how their work ties back to the vision we're trying to accomplish. Because we're really focused on leverage. You know, how do we get people doing the work that's the highest leverage so they can achieve more by doing less? And that helps, that's helped by, as a leader, connecting the dots between an individual contributor and their work, tying it back to the vision that you're trying to pursue. And then finally, resourcing our vision. So one of the mistakes that you can make as a leader, and it's always a tension. I mean, you know, I think in any growing company, whether, again, you're a solopreneur or you're leading a large team, we can always have a gap between our resources and our vision. But what we don't want to do is be expecting our people to produce results without enough resources in terms of human resources. So it's important to look carefully at that and find out, you know, do we need some additional resources? Do we need to outsource here? And sometimes what you find is that actually that's much less about a cost and it's much more of an investment because the return on that investment is greater than what you're making. And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of the counterintuitive thing. I think often we think it's going to be a cost center, but it actually ends up becoming a profit center for the organization.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think about it like that. Every time I hire somebody, I'm hiring 23 people this year and every single one of them, I think about like an investment and I'm expecting to get a return on that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, the book is called Win at Work, Succeed at Life, Five Principles to Free Yourself from the Cult of Overwork. Megan, if people want to come find you and learn more about the work that you do, where can they go?
Yeah, they can do that at michaelhyatt.com. That's our company website. Also, we have some special bonuses for your listeners when they purchase the Win at Work and Succeed at Life book, and they can find out about that at winandsucceedbook.com/creative.
Fantastic. Well, Megan, thanks so much for the great work that you and the entire company do, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks, Todd. It's my pleasure.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.